G.L. Corum is in the studio with me tonight to talk about Ulysses S. Grant, who many of you know grew up just east of here. She's done extensive research for her book titled Ulysses Underground, The Unexplored Roots of U.S. Grant and the Underground Railroad, and we are going to learn what she has discovered. G.L., welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here.
I'm glad to see you. So much of your book has a geographic focus, which is to the area just to the east of Cincinnati, what we now know as Ripley and Georgetown. However, in 1790, Ohio wasn't even a state yet, and Ulysses S. Grant wouldn't be born for another 30-plus years. So there was a group of people that moved here with, you think, a specific commitment to living together, built their houses in a certain way. Could you reconstruct that for us, what their religious and social beliefs were?
When I first began researching people who wanted slavery to end, I kept looking for the first organized resistance. And various footnotes in different books led me to Southern Ohio. And I met with the president of Adams County's Historical Society. He's now dead, Stephen Kelly. And he had a map of all the safe houses. And I asked him the dates of when each person arrived, and nearly everyone on a certain line of roads, of the road, had arrived before Ohio statehood. And I just had this intuitive flash that they had moved here for a purpose. And he didn't think so. Later, I convinced him. I wish I'd gotten that in writing before he died. But all of them, most of the ones that I was researching, were people of Reformed faith, often they would be called Presbyterians, but not all. Some were seceders or covenanters or associate Reformed. But they aligned their homes in a north-south line because they had heard the scripture say, let the oppressed go free. They felt a biblical mandate. And many were also children or themselves revolutionary veterans and wanted, like Wickerham, who was a German Reformed person in the northernmost home in the county, he didn't want to see this new government that he had fought for allowing slavery. It was making it senseless to have a democracy if the democracy was allowing slavery.
Well, it's also unusual, this north-south lineup, as you point out, because this was the wilds, this was the wilderness. So more likely people would have clustered in a small community. Just a sort of very basic reason to support your thesis. So I just quickly want you to tell us, Ohio became a state in 1803. What does Thomas Jefferson want Ohio to be in relation to slavery? What decision does he want the state to make?
He's pushing to allow slavery for the first 7 years of the state, or some arrangement like that. He's wanting slavery to get a foothold in this new state that would be formed in the Union. But by one vote, Ohio comes into the Union as the first state forever forbidding slavery. And much of what is remarkable about America being a true liberty and justice place for everyone comes from Ohio, although it's often overlooked.
Mm. There was, as you state, of course, a tremendous danger in the escape of the slaves, most of all to the slaves themselves. However, in this book, you're focusing on people who were in Grant's everyday life, primarily whites, and the work they did in helping slaves to escape. So if you would talk about Grant's early life in this environment that he was growing up in.
Most of his friends, his parents' friends, this nucleus of people he's surrounded by, are of this virulent anti-slavery stripe. And his uncle, Peter Grant, lives in Maysville on the south side of the river, but is an early president of the Maysville chapter of the Abolition Society of Kentucky. He is the president of that before Ulysses is even born. And he is one of John Rankin, who I'm sure many of your listeners know about the Rankin Historical Site in Ripley on the Hill. When Rankin writes a book against slavery, he mentions in his biography that, or maybe it's his son that mentions it, that Peter Grant is one of his firm supporters when he's putting out that book. So Ulysses is growing up with that. Also, Peter brings an enslaved woman who's pregnant and has a little boy already, and they come and stay with Ulysses' whole family until the baby's born and until she is able to document that she's a free person. So that was found through a St. Louis court record when Jesse, in the 1840s, is asked to give an affidavit on whether or not Leah is a free woman. So that is just a recent discovery. But Ulysses is a part of this group of people. He's growing up in this group of people who are determined to end slavery. And John Rankin, in his autobiography, writes that he went to visit Ulysses in the White House, and he didn't need any introduction because Ulysses had often heard him preach. Mm-hmm. And Ulysses spent his last year in Ohio in Ripley going to school.
Well, interestingly enough, Ulysses, as a teenager, as I understand it, has a livery business. So it was like a cartage, if you will, a hauling service, but transporting people. And part of what's happening, of course, is there's tremendous secrecy about helping the slaves escape because there are terrible penalties for it, either by mobs or by law. Talk about why you think the livery service was connected to the Underground Railroad.
Ulysses talks often. He doesn't write much about his youth, but he does write that he rode over every bit of road within a 50-mile radius of where he was living. That's a lot of territory for a young boy, but he never mentions what he was hauling. And one chapter in the book is called Premeditated Silence, and it's about how people in this area just learned from birth to really guard their words. And in having different people read it before it actually went to press, one Grant scholar said, that's the most important chapter. That really explains Ulysses. You should put that at the very front of the book. But another Underground Railroad person said, oh, everybody in this area was really, really quiet. You should just take that out of the book. So anyway, I think that that's a crucial part of his childhood, but it isn't 100% secure because everything was hidden.
Let's move on to his adult life, early adult life. He goes off to West Point. His father secures this enrollment for him. And through his roommate, who does he meet? And
Frederick Dent is his roommate. And Frederick Dent is from a slaveholding family in Missouri. And when he's first stationed in Jefferson Barracks, outside of St. Louis, he goes to visit Frederick Dent's family and later meets Julia, who he falls in love with. They both are very fond of horses, and they ride together. And their love story is really one of the remarkable romances of our nation. He's a very faithful and loving husband and father, and he was always much more able to do his job when Julia was with him or near him. He needed home life. He liked home life.
Well, and there are comments also about his being soft, if you will, on the slaves. And ultimately, of course, he moves away from here. He leaves the army. He tries several businesses. And then what happens at age 42?
By then, he's in Galena, Illinois. The year before the war broke out, he was living with his brothers in that town, working. And that it's not real clear exactly what he's doing. I think more research in that area will yield good fruit. And I think a new book is coming out soon on that particular year. I'm looking forward to that. But when the war breaks out, word gets to Elihu Washburn, I believe I've got that name right, that Ulysses has served in the army and Ulysses doesn't really want to enlist. He had resigned, but he's pressed upon, and then he does enlist. And once he's in, he realizes we have got to win this war, and he never stops fighting.
I heard somebody say recently, without Grant, there would be no Lincoln, and probably not the country we have today.
Right.
He really did save the country.
Yes. When he died, his funeral train was 7 miles long. Every stripe of humanity gathered to mourn him. He was way more popular than Lincoln. But at the turn of the century, after the people who had known him died, the people who saw the rise of the KKK deliberately distorted his reputation, casting him as all the negative terms that many of us heard growing up, that really, upon deeper research, turn out to be yellow journalism, made up things that have little substance, in fact. But he was a remarkable person who didn't want us to be a country with enmity and wanted to rebuild a lasting peace with justice.
It's so wonderful to have this view of him, because I would agree with you that certainly he's not been given his due. He made his mistakes, but he hasn't been properly honored. Thank you so much for the book and for visiting with us tonight. Fascinating stuff.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
I've been talking with T.L. Corum about her book, Ulysses Underground, The Unexplored Roots of U.S. Grant and the Underground Railroad. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
We are ready for the fight. We will struggle for the right. And we know that Grant is true. His arm is strong. He is once more at our head, as he was when late he led. And the battle cry of freedom was our song. Grant, 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 the country's calling. Goodbye, Andy, you must go. For the man will be our head, on to victory has led. For to Grant a traitor ever is a foe. He will win election day as he holds our foes at bay, and we all will cheer to hear the happy news. He will oust the traitor horde with the ballot as his sword. The Ku Klux Klan will shiver in their shoes. Grant, 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 the country's calling. Goodbye, Andy, you must go. For the man will be our head, on to victory has led. For to Grant a traitor ever is a foe.